Blog Talk Radio.
Some of it you gon' like, some of it you ain't. Tired of hearing fools complaining in barber chairs and beauty shops.
This is Truth Brothers Radio.
That's more like it.
If you're not listening to the Truth Brothers, then the truth ain't in you.
Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. It's that time again. It's Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. Truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
And I'm back, ladies and gentlemen, logging into the chat room as we speak, your questions and comments on tonight's show.
And everybody knows that is the producer supreme, Candace.
Yes.
Well, how was everyone's week?
Pretty good for me, man. I had an okay week. I mean, had my son's birthday party to attend. Happy first birthday to my son, Armani Patrick.
Happy birthday, Armani.
You know, just making sure he's good and he's straight. So, yeah, other than that, I had a pretty good week, man.
Cam?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Your week is poor.
You know.
One day you're going to have a good week in the world.
It was fair to middling, you know. And I mean.
Well, I had a good week up until the weekend. I just want to say for the record that Sears is like got to be one of the worst companies on the face of the earth. I just had to get a wash and dry delivered. And do you know that it took 3 days to get a wash and dry delivered?
But Sears is the place to buy tires.
For tires, because you can get them on at that point. They ain't got to be delivered to you.
Right, right. But other than that, man, yeah, I had a pretty decent week.
All right, yeah, and this has been a big. This week has been marked on the calendar since July.
Absolutely,
since we did the first two Fathers' Rights episodes, so this is a big one.
And tonight's show will be absolutely huge. We have our guest host Tony Breedlove, who will be joining us with a lot of facts about the case we will get into. And after this show, we'll be going right over to Hot Topics Talk Radio to continue this story. So we encourage everybody, man, tune in, call in.
That's right.
Hit the one if you got any questions, any comments, anything you want to say, if you got a story or something like that, or anything that can help. You know, just
questions, because you might have a lot of questions
this
one. And trust me, by the time we finish, you're going to want to go to Hot Topics because the story continues from there. So who we hollering at?
All right. Well, today we're going to holler at Marvin Norman, Lonnie Irby, Denise Lowes. I'm just playing. Grown Soul Real Talk. Got to say what's up to them. Rashawn Franklin, Nakia Hall. And I got to say happy birthday to Alexis Davis. I didn't say it last week, and I do apologize for that. And speaking of birthdays, we got to go through on the 13th, Brittany Bullock celebrated hers. On the 15th, Courtney Lane, Carmen McReynolds, Perry Small from WVON.
Big sister, what's
yes,
up?
Yes, sir. Marlon Johnson, Yvette Turner, and my son, you know, we said earlier, Armani Patrick. Happy birthday. He had his on the 15th. On the 16th, Scott Wolf and Gerald Williams. You know Scott Wolf, right? Good brother. 17th, Kevin O'Miller. On the 18th, Devon Hudson.
That's sister. What's up, sister? That's literally my sister.
Right. You got a sister named Devon and a brother named Devon. That's cool business, man. A lot of people don't get that lucky. And on the 19th, Ronaldo Morgan, Tyra Irving, and Kadeem Smith. Those are all the people we want to say happy birthday to from Truth Brothers Radio. Love y'all.
Right.
Now.
All right. With all that out the way, let us introduce you to our guest, which is actually going to end up being our guest host.
Absolutely. we gotta bring in the lovely and talented Mrs. Tony Breedlove from Hot Topics Talk Radio.
Get up. Well, hello there. Hello. Wow, that's the first time I've ever gotten an applause.
Applause the first time you were here.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
We're going to try to for joining us.
Try to get through this one, I guess.
It's a tough subject. It's a tough subject when you don't have to attach someone personally to it. But when you attach someone that you know, and especially someone that you care for, then it becomes even more tough. So I am I'm looking forward to it, and I know you guys are betting on whether or not I'm going to cry or not.
Absolutely.
But it is. It's a tough show. So I'm ready when you guys are.
Okay. I mean, let's dive right into this. Basically, today, I mean, for those who are listening, we already have a full bank in the chat room, which is crazy. I mean, not even the chat room, in our calling queue, our switchboard, we have a full bank already of people just ready to hear this story. So, I mean, honestly, how do you want to attack this? Do you want to just go and tell the people the story?
Well,
that's the best.
What I'll do, but you know what I think I'll do is let me give them, because I always like to be upfront and honest as to how we attack our stories on Hot Topic Talk Radio so that people get an understanding of how we come about the topics sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind, then I'll just dive right in. Mm-hmm. This particular topic came to me from Ray, and he called me and he said, you know, I have something I want you to address. He said, I trust you to do this story because it's something that needs to be put out there. It's, you know, far too often that, you know, things of the nature of children being taken from their parent, whether it be a mother or a father, taken away from the other parent, you know, those stories sometimes aren't always told. And when they are told, they're watered down. But nonetheless, Ray asked me to dive into this. And I was honored. Ray and I spoke for, I think, maybe about 2 hours. And I think during that two-hour period, I filled up probably about 10, 11 pages of notes. He made me aware of what he had been facing over the years with a battle of custody of his children. And as he got further and further into the information, you know, I knew that I had my work cut out for me, but I thought, you know, I really want to do my best to make sure that I bring him the best of information that he has shared with me. So that's what we're going to dive into tonight. For those that are listening, I want to give you a little background on Ray Gage's story. Ray Gage was in a relationship with a woman. They had two children, a little boy and a little girl. The relationship, I'm trying to give you a quick version so I can get into talking to Ray, but the relationship had gone sour, and we'll get into those issues as well as to why. But it all came out that Ray ended up taking sole custody, but not by legal aspect, taking sole custody of his two children, making sure that he could care for them, cook for them, clean for them, get them to school, do homework, spend quality time as a dad with them. But when the relationship went sour in so many different ways, it ended up that Ray lost his children and not to see them over the past 10 years. So we're going to get into a little bit, or a lot of bit, I should say. We're going to get into the nature of how all this came down. So, Ray, let's go ahead and get started, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah, and before we jump in it any further, I just want to say, one of the reasons that we decided to do Truth Brothers Radio has a lot to do with the producer Supreme. She kind of pushed, prodded us,
absolutely,
and beat us into submission into doing this show. What it is,
what it's becoming and what it is right now. So I want to give her a lot of kudos for this. And one of the reasons she would use to do this is so we could get this story out, so we could tell this story. We've been living this story for 8 years, and I'm going to let you guys in on a little truth, brother, secret. Me and the producer Supreme is married, if no one ever figured that out. I know when I told Tony that, her mouth fell open. So I guess we just
people do that, like, all the time on the show. Like, are they married? And then you tell them, they're like, really? And shocked or whatever. Y'all are great. Y'all are great at what y'all do, seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely.
The prime movers and shakers pushing us to do this. So I dedicate this show to her because with all the stuff that I've been going through with this, she's been going through it tenfold because she has to deal with it through what's happened to me. And then she had the complete luxury of having to deal with me. And anyone who has to deal with me deserves all kind of kudos. So
that requires
put that out there.
That requires a lot of applause. I'm not.
Because I'm gonna be honest. I was no day at the beach before this. So.
Yeah. And based on what I have, I can tell that you probably weren't.
Yeah. So I'm going to as I tell this story, I'm going to give it to everybody out there, point blank, real straight with no chaser. So I'm not going to tell you that she's a complete devil and I was a complete angel. That's not the case. But I know when I first put this story out there, someone thought that this was going to be a cautionary tale about telling brothers, watch where they stick to jump. This has nothing to do with random smashing of some chick accidentally getting her pregnant. Me and the lady in this story was engaged to be married, and she cut off the engagement. So
right. We
have two children on planet Earth, and they're from her. So, no, I have a bunch of children out there, and I don't go around randomly smashing, knocking up women.
Exactly.
So as we go ahead and get into that, we start off in the year 1993. I had just got out of the military, and I had a job. I had got a job at a local tourist attraction in Chicago called the John G. Aquarium, which is one of the largest aquariums in America, so on and so forth, and I had got a job there. And that's where me and her met. Me and her met.
Now that was in what year?
'93. We started dealing. We became romantically involved. And like I say, there's no heroes and angels in this. She was dealing with somebody, and I was dealing with somebody when this happened, and it broke up both our relationships, and we decided to get together. And that's how that happened. We were young. That's what happened. In 94, my daughter Imani was born. I was working at a transmission automotive plant in Illinois, and I was also in college. And the day my daughter was born, I leapt out and ran out of my U.S. history class to go be with her to see my daughter being born. At that time, we were very much in love, and her family didn't care too much for me because I was Afrocentric and black nationalist at the time. And it just came radiating out of me, my particular politics and life philosophy. She was considered to be the same, and we started off our life that way. I moved to the town that we happen to live in broadcast out of now, in Illinois, University Park. I had a nice little one-bedroom apartment that we shared together with our daughter. And we started off doing what we were trying to do. We had our ups and downs as a couple. 2 years later, my son was born. We had a deal when the children were born. She was to name the first child. I said, that's cool. I get to name the second one. In great African tradition, we both waited 7 days after the child was born to name it, and we knew exactly what names we were giving our children. She named my daughter Mania, Faith and Purpose, and I named my son Rakim Asar, meaning the black god Asar. So we knew we were wide-eyed into what we were getting into. This wasn't someone dominating the other person, and we proceeded to have a relationship, and eventually we were engaged. 2 years after that, we moved. We moved to a bigger apartment. She was working. I was working. And we had our ups and downs in the relationship. We had our arguments. We had our fights. We were no different than any other couple. But things started to change. I changed jobs a couple of times. She changed jobs a couple of times, started getting more pay. And there was a distance growing between us, a series of misunderstandings on both our parts. Again, I'm not going to tell you I'm an angel in this. One of the things that I can remember doing to her that kind of ticked her off, I had got this job that required me to do a lot of driving. And the minute I got this job, my car broke down, and I needed some extensive repair work on a car that I needed. And I didn't have much money. So she wrote a check for the car to get repaired, and I was like, cool, we wrote a check, and we let it bounce, or more or less I let it bounce because I didn't go out of my way to pay for it, and I kind of stuck her with that check. And that wasn't right, and I'm sure she was a little bitter at that. At the same time, as we went on in our relationship, she had a car that went down, and I promptly went out and bought her a car so she could have a car to get back and forth with. She promptly went out that first week and had an accident in it and tried to hide it from me. So, again, we were just young and dumb in a relationship like most young people tend to be. There was, like I said, there was a growing rift coming in between us, and it really manifested when she wanted us to, we were planning on getting married, we had set a date, and she wanted us to buy a house. This is before the big housing bubble, but this is when it was just starting to get going. So people were finding it very easy to get financing. I had a phobia about buying a house. I was always scared of that type of commitment, that level of
responsibility,
yeah, of jumping into something like that. And at the time, I could not put a finger on it, on why I didn't want to do it. But I know she got us to the real estate agent. I sat down before the real estate agent, and she found out how much money I made, and she told me, Mr. Gates, hey, this should be no problem with the type of money you make. This will be no problem. I'll be able to get you into anything. Don't worry about your credit. Don't worry about none of that. Normally, I guess a guy would be rather relieved about that.
Right.
That filled me with more dread than before. I don't want to do this.
Right.
So I started blowing off appointments. I start going out of my way to not do this. And after a while, she started catching on like, okay, why are you doing this? And I really couldn't explain why. I really couldn't. I wasn't trying not to explain. I couldn't put my finger on why. To me, later on, because of course hindsight is 2020, to me, I felt like if I look back on it, that I did not want to get into that level of commitment with her.
Mm-hmm.
After we broke up, the phobia went away. So
wow.
That thing that made her probably a little more bitter. So as the relationship really started to deteriorate, we wasn't talking as much. We wasn't nowhere near as close as we were. We both started tipping out on each other, and the whole house thing bothered her. So at a certain point, she had told me this was during the Christmas season, a couple of days before New Year's Eve, because we were supposed to go out together, and she was like, I don't want to go out with you New Year's Eve. I'm going to go out with some friends from work. And then she kind of told me that, you know, forget this marriage thing. And she told me, she said, I don't really think that you're the type of man that I want my future tied to. I don't think I should have my life in your hands because I don't think you're responsible enough, even though we're in my place together and everything. But I can, you know, at the time I was a little upset. But looking back again in hindsight, I can understand where she was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So, she told me that she wanted to break up and that she wanted to move out. And we kind of didn't speak on that anymore till a couple of months later. Now my kids are, at this point, my daughter is 4 and my son is 2.
What year is this?
This would be, my son was born in 96, so this would be 98.
Okay.
So this is 1998. So as she told me, so at this point we had another blow up, but it didn't start off as a blow up. She told me that she was going to move out. And I'm like, okay, really? And we had this big argument because she said she wanted to move out, but she wanted to get another place. She didn't want to get another place. She was going to buy this house.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She bought this house on her own. And I'm like, okay, cool. But she said, but I don't have anywhere to go in order to get the capital up to buy this house. So it turned into a big argument. And you kind of, and I'm like, okay, so you're telling me that you want to leave me, but you want to stay here while you telling me you want to leave me. And we had this big argument. And I was about to say, hey, you know what? Why don't you just go ahead and grab your bags? If you want to step, go ahead and step. And we we were yelling at each other. And I looked down the hallway. Now, the hallway from our bedroom goes right down into the living room. And sitting on the couch is Imani and Rakim. And I looked at them. They don't know what we're arguing about. They're just sitting there looking. And I looked at them, and I said, and a voice in me said, you don't want the last thing your children see of you two being together is you putting her out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, you know what? No, you're right. Cool. You can go ahead. You can stay here as long as it takes for you to get the place because I want to see you succeed. Go do your thing. Go ahead and do you. Now, not only did I let her stay there rent-free, facility-free, so she can get up the money for the down payment or whatever she needed to move, I gave her a bedroom set. I gave her a television. I gave her a lot of things. And at the time, I'm thinking, I'm waiting for her to tell me, okay, well, the kids are going to be here and blah, blah, blah. She told me she didn't want to take the kids. She said she wants the kids to stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, who am I going to argue on this? So I'm like, we always believe as a black couple that black couples could be as mature as, we always said, we always use the archetype as the Will and Jada because they had this progressive relationship that, they not only did Will Smith have this great relationship with his wife Jada, they both had this great relationship with her ex, and they were all involved on any type of thing. You read the thing, and I thought that was really great that black couples can do that because people always swear that black couples can't get along.
Mm-hmm.
Said, okay, we're gonna work this out. We're gonna do this. We got along great. Hell, I helped her move.
Mm-hmm.
Help pack that van and help move. I helped her look at the place. I helped her identify flaws in the place and what she needed to do. So, and at the whole time, I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, my children are watching. My children are watching. I don't want them to see a black man do this. Also, we talked about custody. And at the time, she was saying, hey, you know what? I can sign over custody to you. And I was like, no need to do that because one thing I always felt that I always believed is that I never believed in having to stand before some white judge and some white judge on a bench is telling me how to be a father. I find that offensive.
Right.
Now I know all of this is going counter to a lot of things that we covered in the first two Father's Rights series and everything that we told you guys out there is absolutely correct. But at the time I didn't want nothing to do with any court because I didn't feel that a court should be telling two adults how they should handle their business.
Absolutely.
And I think that if we just handle our business together, the world would recognize and accept that. I thought that being a father was every bit as equal and important as being a mother. I found that to be wrong later, but I thought that if I say I'm the child's father, that should carry enough weight.
You would think so.
That's what I was thinking.
Like a lot of men tend to think, though.
Exactly.
Right,
so. Yeah, exactly.
You would think
Even going to no court. Now, funny, my ex-wife from my first marriage, when we broke up and she moved out, me and her went to lunch one day. And at lunch, she told me, she said, you know what? You better go get a lawyer and you better do her. She told me to do her. And I'm like, I kind of took offense at it. I'm like, why would I do that? I say, I got nothing against her like that, and I'm not trying to do that to her. I said, we got this arrangement. The kids are with me now, and they can see her anytime they want. There was no sex visitation. If she want to see them, she could see them. Matter of fact, if we both had something planned to do with them on the weekend, I can see it because I get them every day. I get to put them to bed every day. I get to play with them every day. So I figured, that's something planned. Hey, I can always put my stuff off because I'm always with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to. I don't want to talk too fast. I'm trying to slow down a little.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
And as we proceeded on, this went on for a number of years. Everything was fine. I dealt with. I had a number of people I was seeing at the time, but only one of them ever really got to meet my kids, because I didn't let people meet my kids. That was my number one rule. Don't get to see my kids, because I don't want them getting to know you, because most likely you're not going to be around.
Right.
So that was like one of my number one rules.
So Ray, between the time that she moved out and the relationship basically had broke down and broke off, how long was it before it became an issue of the custody? Because you were taking full care of these children. You were providing their child care for after school, their homework, like I said in the beginning. You were cooking, you were cleaning, you were doing everything for these children, but you had no legal custody that was established. How long before then did it really start turning ugly?
Candace, you can help me out with it. We'll say 4 years. What year did we get married?
You got married in 2004.
So you
so 2004 is when it 2004 is when it hit the fan. I'll say 2006 is when the crack started to show.
So you're saying that
moved out in 2000.
Are you saying that the reason that it kind of started is because she got a hint that somebody else, or she believed that it was Candace might have been involved or something?
No. I don't even know Candace yet.
Okay.
I don't even know Candace at this point. And one of the people that I was dealing with that I let close enough, they had a child. Their child was the same age as my daughter. She had a boy. So as we started getting cooler, we started letting them play together. And they all got along. So that was fine. So as we would do things like Imani had a birthday, and Candace was doing things like missing their birthday. Matter of fact, as we were breaking,
hey.
I'm sorry, not Candace.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right
now. Okay.
I was looking at the kid's mom. Monica.
Yeah. The kid's mom.
No, I'm saying her name, Monica. Okay. Her name is.
Oh, see, I was gonna try and not say her name, but
okay. Well,
it's up to you.
Name, and actually that's her nickname, so I'm not even giving
okay.
out her
okay.
government name
going.
Now.
Okay.
Right. So, one time I had a birthday party planned for her at the local arcade, and it was a big thing. She had a little friend by, and her mom was supposed to show up, and her mom didn't show up, and this really, really, really upset her. And we were consoling her and telling her, hey, your mom had to work or whatever. And actually, she wasn't at work. We don't know where she was, but she wasn't at work. And I ended up letting her party turn into a sleepover because she was so upset, so we was trying to appease her and make her happy.
Okay.
So these were signs that she's not interested in the kids. She's not really spending any time with them on the weekends like I thought she would have. But at the same time, she's bought this house. She's by herself. When she bought this house, Clinton was in office. Times were good. And obviously, she was calculating her overtime and with what it takes to afford the house. Moving to 2000, Clinton ain't in office no more. George Bush is in office. And W is thanks to the economy, like giving rich people tax breaks. And it's affecting her pay because all the overtime is dried up. Now she's trying to do what she's doing on 40 hours a week, and it's not going too hot. So at one point, she confided in me that she's having a little problem maintaining and holding on to the house she's behind, and she's got to do stuff to make this up. So she's spending time with the kids. I say, hey, don't worry about it. Do what you got to do. Me and them are fine. We're good. You go ahead and handle your business. So she's not dealing with them as much. Also, just for clarity, because this is going to become an issue later, where she works is a place that I used to work. When I told you that, when I met her and we got our first apartment, she works where I used to work now. And there was this guy there that me and him were friends or acquaintances at work. He's an older gentleman.
Okay.
And And with the job I had to work closely with the department that he was in. So we got to know one another well enough to, you know, converse here and there. So when she started working there, he knows who she is and promptly gets in there.
Right.
So they start dealing. This is the older guy. They start dealing.
Now, when you say dealing.
Now, that's still in 2004, 2005, right?
This is in 2000. When she don't know it.
When she met him.
Yeah. I don't find out till like 02, I think.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they're dealing, but no one's telling me anything.
Okay.
Which is fine. Mm-hmm. At this point, you know, I'm dealing with someone, we're doing things and I got the kids. Everything is cool. I'm happy. Me and the kids, I cook for the kids, I clean for the kids. I go to school and register them. I took them to the library. Hell, their library cards were under my address. Their school stood under my address. When the school has a problem, they call me. When there's something to be with, they call me. Also, as a point of fact, the school faculty wasn't too fond of her anyway, because anytime she tried to deal with them, there appeared to be drama. So they preferred to deal with me. They went out of their way to deal with me. And As time goes on, she's spending less and less time with them because she's trying to hold on to her house. She's trying to do her thing. Me and them are doing a thing. I'm having a great time. I have no problem with my children being with me. I love my children. They were my best friends. We did everything together. We played little games. When I say little games, I don't mean board games. They like to do things like they would see a board game or they would see a game on TV and they want to turn it into a literal game. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
There was a game out called Don't Wake Daddy, and the commercial was these kids sneaking around the house. Daddy asleep on the couch, and I guess the object of the game was to get around the board without hitting some trigger that wakes up this toy daddy on the board game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought that was funny. So I would act like I'm asleep. They would sneak around the house, and I would wake up and say, why would you wake me up when I'm trying to take a nap? And they would run around the house, and I would chase them around the house. They
mm-hmm.
knew that I collect comic books. I've been collecting comic books for about, actually 20 years now. And they knew I collect comic books. They love to read comic books with me. I would read my comic books to them. They liked anything I liked. I introduced them. They learned how to take what we would call movie naps. And we would love to take movie naps. And movie naps is we would take a nap, and I tell them if we would watch a campy, terrible movie, and I said, if you go to sleep just right, you can hear the movie in your dream, and you'll dream a whole different movie than what you're hearing. They got a kick out. So we love to go to sleep to Godzilla movies. That was our thing. These are all little things that we did together. When they re-released, I know I'm giving y'all a little back in time thing, but when they re-released Star Wars, the Star Wars trilogy, back to the big screen back in the early 2000s, back in the 90s, that was a really big thing. I took my daughter and my baby brother because they've never experienced Star Wars on the big screen, and I was telling them that this is a cultural thing, this is a big thing, and I took them. So when Episode 1 came out, they really wanted to see this movie. We went to go see it. This is something they love. They love Pokemon. That was the first thing that they got into. This is the first thing that they got into that I had no clue of. So they introduced me. So I went out of my way to make sure I learned all the first 98 Pokemon from the first series. When the movie came out, we went and stood in line to go see the movie. Anything they liked. When they had, matter of fact, when Burger King was giving away Pokemon toys, they came in this replica Pokeball, which is actually worth a lot of money now. That you would actually press the button on the Pokeball, the ball would open up and there'd be a Pokemon inside.
Yeah.
I came home with two of those the first time, and I gave him. My son loved Pokemon. He thought he was ass, so he would wear his cap to the side. I gave him that Pokeball. He threw his cap to the side, yelled, "Pikachu, go," and threw that ball directly upside my head. That's the first thing he did. But I'm loving every moment of it. I'm loving every moment of it. This is the thing that we did together. as time goes on, the first Spider-Man movie is coming out. Again, this is another big cultural thing. We've been waiting for this movie for years. So when the first Spider-Man movie came out, we made a big thing about it. Couldn't wait to go see it. So we go see it, right? Had a great time. I remember it's a Wednesday night. I'm making dinner for them. They're still talking about this movie. And we're sitting there. It's about 5:30. We're eating dinner. Talking about the movie. They have so much. It's like, can we go back? Can we go back? I'm like, yeah, we can go back. We'll probably go back next Saturday. No, can we go now? Let's go now. Let's go see it again now. We ate dinner. We packed up and then went to go see it again because they wanted to see it. That was just, I had a ball. That's the kind of thing I always did with them. At the same time, I'm still a stern father. They know that they had rules with me. They know that if you break rules, that there's going to be repercussions. So I'm not a pushover dad, but I rarely had to be there behind. Because they knew that if it gets to that, that ain't going to be pretty. So they would. I learned that the three strike rule. If I got to say it three times, it's going to be a problem. So they made sure it never got down to three times.
Okay.
Keeping that in mind. That was
2002.
That's in 2002. So now, as time goes on, my cousin is pregnant. She's having a baby shower. And I don't want to go to this baby shower. Baby showers are boring. I don't like baby showers. But my daughter needs to be around my cousins. And I have a lot of female cousins. And I wanted to have her be around as many females as possible so she don't be under my male-dominant testosterone all the time. So baby shower, I'm going primarily for her. So we go to this baby shower. I set her downstairs with the women. They doing the baby shower thing. We went and bought a gift, and I let her pick out the gift. So we went to Toys R Us. We pick out the gift for the baby shower, and I let her write her name on the card and write stuff on the card. And I sit her down there with the women folk with the baby shower gift, and I let her. My mother's down there. My aunt and my cousins are all down there having a good time. I let her down there. Me, my brother. And my brother-in-law are outside with my son. We're outside sitting on the porch talking about how much we hate these things and how the guys are just stuck outside, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, I say this because an important thing in my life is about to change. Coming in between this Bronco and this expedition comes Candy. This is the first time I've ever seen Candace. And Candace is walking up the stairs, and she looks at me and says hi. I look at her and say hi, and I'm watching her go upstairs, right? And I had just said, like, man, you know what, all these women, all that tackling down there, there's nothing on the planet that could make me go down there and hang out down there while I'm drinking a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Into the building, 10 minutes later, I say, hey, I better go find out what the hell they doing down there. I go down there and starts to just incessantly stare and follow Candace around the whole
time. Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was an uh-oh.
That was an uh-oh moment.
Really, Tony, how many men do you know that go to a baby shower, right? I said,
not many, unless they have an ulterior motive.
Okay. All I knew is he's going to get the crud slapped out of him because I'm sure somebody, and I'm just like, okay.
Right.
The crazy part about this is that I did not know Candace and my cousin are best friends. I did not know Candace knew everybody in my family except for me.
But you.
I'm the oldest grandchild, and I mean I'm the oldest by a number of years. So, like, by the time they met, I was in the military. So she's never had a chance to see me. Right. So she don't know who I am. I didn't know she knew everybody in my family. Now I got my aunts and everybody telling me who she is. So by the end of the show, I go up and talk to her, and then I ask her out. So I was like, hey, we can go get some dinner or something right now. And she like, cool. So I give my kids to my brother and say, hey, man, you need to hold them down tonight. Trust me. So my brother babysits the kids.
I think Candace missed it.
Right. So my brother babysits. This is the day before Father's Day, matter of fact. And we go out. She babysits the kid, and as they say, the rest is history. Me and her started dealing. Over a bit of time, I proposed to her. We're engaged, and I move her in with me, and her daughter in with me. Kids get along. Everything is fine. We got one congealed household. She learns. She got to see how I am with my kids, because she noticed that we like did everything together. Like our second date was we all went to the drive-in because I wanted her kids to do something with my kids. So
right.
We all drive-in together.
Okay.
And this point, we move in. Monica knows she's moved in. Monica knows with Dylan. Monica knows I'm serious about her. Matter of fact, before I proposed to her, when I realized that I wanted to kind of be with her, I thought about the whole stepkid thing and the whole stepmom thing. And Candace didn't know this at the time, but I went back to Monica and I asked her. She don't know that I'm going to propose to Candace. She don't know nothing about that. I said, look, do you want to give this one more shot?
Mm-hmm.
I always believe that parents should be sticking stuff out, even if it's hard, for the sake of the kids.
Absolutely.
Now, when the kids turn 18, whatever happened is whatever happened. But I believe even two people who can't stand each other need to tough it out for the kids, because that's the way they did it back in the day. So I asked her, do you want to take another shot at this? We can take another shot at this. Even if it's just for the sake of the kids, I'm willing to give it a shot if you are. She tells me no, because she's dealing with this other guy who now I know about him. Me and him had a little run-in. Okay. Orchestrated by my daughter, but that's a story we'll tell later.
Okay.
And once she said no, I said okay. So then I waited another month, and then I told, and then I proposed. Then I told her I proposed to Candace. We engaged, and she seemed really happy for us. She's like, okay, that's really great. I'm happy for y'all. She goes out to start calling Candace, and they started talking like we should be friends.
Of course.
Yeah. Everything. You know, between her and I mean, if she couldn't pick the kids up or needed me to do something, hey, I'm Johnny on the spot, or vice versa. You know, I thought we had a very good relationship, you know, especially, you know, and so it was just astounding. I mean, we would have phone conversations. We would have phone conversations for hours, you know, we're sitting with, you know, and, you know, everything just seemed to be couple status. You know, she would come pick the kids up, to take them to school in the morning. You know, someone would come and get them from her. I mean, it just seemed to be fine. Everything just seemed to work out, you know, without a hitch.
Well, we're going to take a really, really quick break, Tony. We'll be right back to finish this story up. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
What Malcolm X said when he got silenced by Elijah Muhammad was in fact true. America's chickens are coming home to roost. We took this country by terror away from the Sioux, the Apache, the Arawak, the Comanche, the Arapaho, the Navajo. Terrorism. We took Africans from their country to build our way of ease and kept them enslaved and living in fear. Terrorism. We bombed Grenada and killed innocent civilians, babies, non-military personnel. We bombed the black civilian community of Panama with stealth bombers and killed unarmed teenagers and toddlers, pregnant mothers and hard-working fathers. We bombed Gaddafi's home and killed his child. We bombed Iraq. We killed unarmed civilians trying to make a living. We bombed
Truth Brothers. Truth Brothers Radio. We're back, and we're right back with Tony Breedlove on. You still there with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, and we're back with the Truth Brothers Radio special edition, Father's Rights, basically this reggae story. Anybody who's been able to chime in with us for the first 45 minutes, man, it's already been something to hear.
Yeah.
Tony?
Yeah, it is. I tell you, you know, I'm trying not to go there, you guys, because I have formed an opinion of someone that I don't know, and I've always tried not to do that. But after learning the story, then now, you know, now I'm guilty of doing it. Because a lot of things had gone on, you know, that I just thought was just unheard of. But I want to go into asking Ray, because now that we're at the point of where you and Candace are engaged, and now you're moving into marriage, into the point of marriage, you're both taking care of these children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Real quick, I don't want to cut you off real quick, but it's one more little thing I want to give out there, and I'm only giving this because I'm hoping that Imani or Rakim is out there listening to this, and it's something that I want them to remember. When Imani was in first grade, she had this assignment that she had to write a story.
Mm-hmm.
The story that my daughter wrote was how we went school shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that she wrote was about her, me, and my son Rakim going to the store shopping for school clothes for her and school supplies, and how she got to go for school supplies for the first time. And the story that she got had won her the district's Young Authors Award on May 21st, 2001. And I want her to remember this because when Monica took her, she took her and they never got to take an item. So I just wanted her to know that I still have her award in the frame, still here.
Wow.
Mm.
That she won this award. They have her on the town's cable television to receive the award. And she got to go to one of the school board meetings and receive her award from the superintendent of the district. And if she ever wants this, all she got to do is ask me and I'll send it to her.
Mm.
That
You're
is
breaking my heart, Ray.
That is crazy.
So.
You're breaking my heart.
It's heartbreaking, Tony. It's,
yeah.
It's
and hard. Okay, so everything seems cool and everything seems all right. Let's start going into the cracks then. Here's crack for one. One of the times in the summertime, this is July, heat wave, and she has to work overtime. Like I say, she's trying to hold on to deal with her house. I'm working overtime. Candace is working. And most of the time, I usually get the babysitters. I usually get the babysitters and whatever. If all of us is working or something and nobody can watch the kids, I used to get the babysitters. At the time, my brother's busy, my mother's busy, Denise, who usually babysits the kids, she's busy, and I could not get a babysitter. So I had told her, I said, look, you're going to have to come up with a babysitter this time because I'm really at the end of my rope, and I need to do this overtime, and I know you need to, too. So she said, cool, no problem. I'll come up with the babysitter, no problem. As the week goes on, she tells me, on like this is like a Thursday or whatever, and she told me, she said, look, I'm having trouble getting a babysitter, but don't worry about it. The kids can just come with me while I'm at work. Now, to a lot of people, that might seem strange, but I want you to remember, I used to work at this company. And back in the 90s, this was not a weird event to see somebody bringing their kid to work. They would put them, this is a secure place. They got security guards. The lunchroom is air-conditioned. You usually could leave your kids in the lunchroom.
My mom did it all the time with me and my brother.
Yeah, you could leave your kids in the lunchroom with some coloring books, some food or whatever, and then you would be out into the plant working. Nobody said anything. So So when she said this, it didn't strike me as strange or funny because I saw it all the time. Again, that was the 90s. Flashback.
But, then the laws had changed.
Again, September 11th changes everything. So I'm not sure of this, that they have stopped this policy. And obviously at the job, they told her, no, she couldn't do that, but didn't tell me. So she gets them.
Mm-hmm.
The plan was, I'm going to get off, when I get off of work, I'm going to swoop over there. I'll get up there and talk to the security guard. The security guard will call Monica. Monica will go into the lunchroom, get them and bring them out. This was the plan. No problem. So I get there. I pull up. I get out of my car. I'm walking to the guard shack, and I hear my name, Daddy. And it's real faint. And I'm like, okay. I say, they must see me in the lunchroom. Now, the windows are tinted in the plant, so I can't see into the lunchroom. But I say, they must be able to see me. So that must be them calling me.
Okay.
So I'm walking again, and I hear it again, Daddy. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I look around, and I turn around, and I look at the parking lot, and I see a hand out of this van waving to me.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
The fuck?
Right.
So I go over to the van. Now, the van belongs to the old dude that she's dealing with.
To the boyfriend.
To the boyfriend. They're in a van across a blacktop driveway, across a blacktop parking lot of this plant. They put them across the parking lot because they shouldn't have been on the premises to begin with. So they put them in a way the guard wouldn't be able to see them, but they left the van doors open, and they're in the plant working. It is 102 outside.
There you go.
And I go, what the hell? What are y'all doing out here? Mommy told us to stay out here until she came to get us. Well, you came. We seen the car, so we called you. I say, okay. Tony, I'm fuming mad.
I know the story because it's like I'm almost gritting my teeth for you to get to this next part.
Yeah, this is mistake number one for me. This is my first mistake. Again, hindsight being 20/20. If I knew then what I knew now, I would have put my cell phone out and I would have called the goddamn police. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. And as I turned around, Monica is running out of the plant saying, hey, look. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
So when she's running out, I look at them. They're sitting there in T-shirts, burning the fuck up, coloring. I said, well, what if y'all had to use the bathroom? They showed me They showed me a bucket. Luckily, they didn't have to go to the bathroom. Again, the doors are open and the plant is next to a park.
Wow.
The park.
So not only did she show neglect for leaving them in a parked hot van unattended, but then she leaves the door open for someone to come along and take your children.
And away from, and strategically set up away from the guard so that if someone came to snatch them, the security guard wouldn't be able to see it anyway because, hell, he's not supposed to know they're there anyway.
Exactly.
So I'm burning red mad, and I'm looking at her, and I want to cuss her out, but I didn't want them to panic because they don't know that something's wrong.
Right, exactly.
And I didn't want them to panic. I should have let them panic because I should have snapped off and called the police, but I didn't. I got them, and I'm trying to keep from crying because I'm really upset, and I don't want them to know how upset I am. So I put them in the car, and I'm like, me and you are going to talk later. I don't know what the hell your problem is. And she like, I don't know what the hell your problem is. Hell, you couldn't get a babysitter. I couldn't get one either. I said, but you told me I'd be in the building. Well, they told me no. I said, well, why didn't you tell me that? Because at that point, one of us would have had to go ahead and just say, we can't do overtime. When I tell Candace this, Candace say, well, you know what? They really didn't need me at the job anyway that day. Hell, I could have just taken off.
Right.
She never communicated it. So I promptly get them in the car. I take them, and I'm shaking. I'm trying not to cry because I don't want them to see it.
Right, right.
I get them to Baskin Robbins. We're eating Baskin Robbins, and then I took them to the movies. We go see The Matrix Reloaded because I'm so upset, and I'm trying to make it up to them. And I said, I'm so sorry, guys. You never should have been out there like this. But they don't know what's going on. Why they don't know what's going on? Because when I went to go talk to her later, I did not do it in front of them. We did not have an argument in front of them. To this day, if they're listening to this day, they don't probably remember this because this was my job and her job as a parent to make sure it didn't scar them, so they didn't need to remember it.
Right.
So when me and Candace, when I told her what happened, I didn't do it in front of the kid. We went off somewhere and I told her what happened. And Candace tells me, you need to report this to DCFS. And I'm like,
let me ask Candace something right quick, Ray, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Candace, when Ray told you that, and I'm sorry, I'm getting some feedback because I feel like I'm talking double. When Ray first told you what happened that day, what was your immediate reaction? How did you feel?
As a parent myself, it's the middle of July, and to have those babies sitting in that van, they could have died. They could have died from heat exhaustion. I just couldn't wrap my head around it, Tony. The reason why I advised him to contact DCFS, because she endangered their lives, and I know the kids were way too young to even realize that. And I was so upset. What I knew is that the one thing that he needed to do was to report that, because who's to say the next time when it would happen again? But just as a woman, as a mother, as his
right.
Son, I was livid, absolutely mm-hmm. livid, and befuddled all at the same time, because I just can't wrap my head around how you could just leave your kids like that. You didn't have to. If it got to a point where just, hey, look, you know, like Ray said, pick up a phone, call us. Somebody could have took off work if you really had to
right.
bad. And from what I understand, it was voluntary overtime. But
wow.
Nonetheless, if you had to be at work and one of us had to take off, hell, I would have took off in a minute. It was no problem. She and I had an understanding, or so I thought.
So I thought.
Because I would have left. I would have said, you know what, hey, I can't do this. I had an understanding manager at the time who would have let me leave. It was
right.
no big deal. Right. And that's what I didn't get. And the one thing, and then I'm going to let Ray jump back in here. The one thing that just blew me away is how could you get defensive over something that serious?
Over your wrongdoing.
It's not a puppy. This is not a puppy that you leave in the car with the window. These are children. These babies were 9 and 7 at the time.
Wow. But we got to, hey, Tony, we'll take this last break. We're about to jump into the second hour. You can come back with all of your questions, and everybody, man, we want you to really chime in on this. Second hour is coming up. True Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. This is the second hour of Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And, of course, as always, you guys can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. Truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
Well, I'm viewing the chat room. Unfortunately, I cannot log in for some reason, but I do see all your questions and your comments here in the chat room. So please continue to do so.
Yeah, don't. If you see some, read them out. Don't. You can stop me. And again, this is a special.
I think everybody's into this story.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a special episode of Two Truth Brothers. This is the third part in our Father's Right series, and I'm telling a very personal story.
Basically, the Father's Right, the Ray Gage story, which honestly, man, I'm sitting here and I mean, real quick, I don't want to, take too much time, man, but I knew part of the story. I knew a lot of the story. I've known this dude since like 2007 when we were working together at this telephone company. And it took like, I think I didn't get to hear the story. I've always saw pictures, like in his house, he has plenty of pictures of his kids. I never saw them, but, I saw the pictures, and over the course of me and his brother getting real cool, he came out and he showed me, an article that was actually published in a black newspaper here that had the story in it. And I read it, and it was like, I was hurt, because I've heard a story. This something that happened is something that you would see in a movie. I've never been this close to something where it was real. So that in itself, man, I just had to put that out there about people and the situation. But I just wanted to say that I'm gonna go back to producing. Y'all
No. And of course, we also gotta introduce our very special guest, Tony Breedlove, who's actually doing Maja. She's actually leading it. She's leading this ship today. So she's actually our captain in chief. So what's up, Chief?
I don't know. I'm just, I'm sitting over here trying not to break down. You tell such a, it's so compelling. If we were to get this in the news, and as I read the story that Devon was referring to from the newspaper, it doesn't depict at all everything that you had faced as a father in trying to provide the best optimal care for your children. It does not depict that. And that's why I always say that it's good to have these shows like Truth Brothers and Hot Topics to be able to give the true story so that you don't miss anything, so it's not watered down. But like I said, when I read the article, after obtaining all the information from you, right there was enough to make me feel angered, hurt, not for her, but for those children, for you, for fathers that are going through this, and it does not get enough attention. It just does not get enough attention. But what I did find out is, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of statistics because we're going to do that on the next show.
Let me put that out there.
Actually,
let me put this out there.
Huh?
I want to put something out there. The next, right after this show, we'll be turning right over to Hot Topics Talk Radio, where we will continue this conversation, and we will get any questions that will be proposed to the brother over here. Any questions that anybody will have, I'm sure he'll be more than willing to answer. I just had to put that out there, Tony. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. But with saying that about there's not enough attention to children that are taken from their parents by another parent, it made me really, really get more involved in this topic and in your story. And just alone, there are 203,000 children, that's 78% of our children, missing, that are actually abducted by family members. And over 94% of that 203,000 are actually the parents.
Mm. Wow. Mm. I really didn't know that.
It's crazy. But it has to be more attention to what goes on, when you have two parents that are not living in the same household and one decides to leave and take those children. It has to be more attention to it. Because with that being said, we would hope that there would be more attention by way of legislature mm-hmm. as to being able to hold those people accountable, you know, because it is damaging to the children, to the absent parent. It's completely devastating. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. But let me ask you something, though, Ray, because there was an incident that really stuck out for me. You know, it wasn't taking away from the incident with the children left in the van, but there was an incident where I think your son was being a boy, basically, in his behavior. He was, you know, he was up and down like most boys, you know. And Monica wanted to have this the little boy seen by a doctor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist. But it was found that the baby did not have any behavioral problems. He was just being a boy.
Mm-hmm.
But she was insisting on putting him on Ritalin.
Yeah. We are actually, I'm kind of building up to that. Because the more incidents happen, the more I get to touch the system. And the more I get to touch the system, I'm finding out how much I despise the system. Again, to this point, I've never had I told you, I never felt like I wanted to stand before the white man and do anything. So I'm trying to stay as system free as I can. So when this incident with the van happened, me and Candace has this discussion that night, and she's telling me, you need to go to DCFS. You're going to have to report this. And I'm like, no, I don't know. She might have freaked out, but I don't want to do that. And she's telling me, no, this is something you have to do because that's not something that should be done. And I'm like, well, I disagree. We kind of went round and round on that. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go talk to her tomorrow, and the kids won't be there. We can just have some real talk and find out what the hell her malfunction is. Go there the next day. I go to her house. I'm in her doorway. We're having this argument about what the hell happened. She's unremorseful, and she's got this attitude, but I'm their mother, and that's what I decided what to do, and that should be good enough. And I'm like, bull pucky. No,
wow.
No, that ain't even going to fly. And we're having this argument, and it got totally nowhere. So I came home and I told her, I said, you're right, I was wrong, I'm going to have to go ahead and do that. So that Monday, I called DCFS. Now, this is my first case with the system. I called DCFS around Tuesday or Wednesday of that week. An investigator called me. I can't tell you the investigator's name because she only gave it to me once. Why did she only give it to me once? We only talked once.
Then she talked to the mother.
So I'm at work. I'm standing in a dumpster at work when the call comes through. So I'm kind of got my hands full.
Right.
So I tell her I can't talk right now. Can we talk another time? But she just said, I just got a couple of questions. So she has me go through what happened. I tell her what happened. She says, well, look, I'm going to go ahead and investigate. I'll be talking to the mother and finding out what's going on. And I will get back in contact with you with my findings and everything. So I'm thinking I'm going to talk to this lady again. I've never talked to this lady again to this damn day.
Wow.
When I found out that Monica was indicated with DCFS, I found out because Monica called me and cussed me out till the cows came home about her being indicated.
That's
how I found out. She cussed me out and told me what a counter-revolutionary I am and what a hypocrite I am because I went to the white man and I told on her to the white man.
Wow.
So so that's how I found out. So I tell Candace, okay, yeah, I said, you got indicated. So give it a couple of months, over a couple of months. She was mad with me. She wasn't talking. We were really barely talking to each other, barely dealing with each other. But eventually time passed. We started talking again. Everything kind of went back to normal, what appeared to be normal. And then the next big event happened. My mother has a asthma attack, and the doctor tells her that the air here is not good for you. You really don't need to be staying here. You're going to have to move. So my parents decide that they need to move to Vegas, and my parents say, well, we need to get rid of the house quick.
Mm-hmm.
Asked that I want to buy their house. And I said, okay, just to get it, and we're going to do something streamlined to get out of the house. So I would take over their mortgage, and we'll work out the sales later because we just need to get her out of there ASAP. So me and Candace picks up their house.
Mm-hmm.
This turns out to be a problem. Again, let's rewind back to when I told you she wanted us to have a house together. And I totally phobied out on that. Now all of a sudden, not only do I get a house, I jump into it with both feet, bringing Candace along with me.
But didn't didn't she say, if I get the story correctly, didn't she say, you were not the man I want to build this house with, I know all this, blah, blah, blah.
That's after I phobied out on the house, though.
I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, it makes no sense to me. Because you phobied out because, hey, you know, it's just something. Evidently, she was feeling the same thing you feeling about not being the person for the house or being the person to get a house with, because she said the exact same thing which you were feeling.
But so, she said it 2 years after I phobied out on the house.
Oh, 2 years after.
Right.
Okay.
I could see her being bitter about that. Because, like I said, from her perspective, I didn't give her a complete rational explanation about that. I just didn't do it.
So how long has it been now? Just curious.
I would say what? 4 years?
4 years. Okay.
That'd be like 4 years since then or whatever.
Right.
Years, whatever. And so we get the house. Now, I'm gonna lay out this house to you guys out there so you can kind of know what we bought. This house has a four bedroom, two bathroom, extended dining room. The house was actually laid out in a real clever way. The living room was downstairs, and the den was upstairs. A big extended den that covered from the front of the house to the back,
like
with
a loft.
Right. And also in the back, we had an in-ground swimming pool that went from 3 to 6 feet, 6.5 feet in ground. The backyard was totally laid out and encased in concrete. So there was very little grass in the back. 2.5 car garage and a driveway that could hold maybe what, roughly six cars?
Yeah.
About six cars? Yeah. So we get the house. We got the pool. Kids are there. The kids got a room. My son got a room. My daughter got a room with my stepdaughter. They wanted to be together.
Okay.
Because my stepdaughter totally adored Imani. She looked up to Imani. She thought Imani was the bee's knees, so to speak. So
mm-hmm.
Imani was. So at the time, Candace has a car. I got a car. And I also bought my father's truck from him. This is two-door Blazer with the back tire in the back. And I'm only saying that because when we bought the truck, it's got this back tire in the back. And like people who have Jeeps usually get like their back tire airbrushed. And at the time, kids had this idea. They wanted to have the back tire airbrushed. They were telling me, why don't we put a big black panther on the back? And I said, oh, that's a good idea. We can have a red, black, and green flag on the back. And at the time, my kids loved wrestling. We used to follow wrestling a lot of times. And we loved the black wrestler. And there was this one particular black wrestler who's like legendary now. We talked about him when we did the Raising the Bar series called Booker T. And his big catchphrase at that time was called, can you dig it, suck it. So they wanted to put on the back, can you dig it, and at the bottom of the tire, suck it. And I was like, that's a good idea. And we had drew this thing up, and we had said we were going to do this. This is something that we said we were going to do because we had the truck. So as they are, we had the place. We're going back and forth. They would go to school. At this point, Shayla, our stepdaughter, is in fifth grade. She's, I mean, I'm sorry, not fifth grade. She's in kindergarten. She's five. And she's in kindergarten. But this is her first time going to school. And mm-hmm. we're going to go to school together. And at the time, Monica was working night. So in the morning, she said, well, I can pick him up in the morning. That'll give me some time with him. I'll take him to school. And then y'all can pick him up. I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's fine. That'll work out. So this is what mm-hmm. we're doing, right? So at the time, she's still struggling with the house. During this time, we find out later that her gas is on. She has no heat in the house. She's got space heaters in the house. And she has no hot water. We don't know this. And the kids are going spending the weekends with her. But we didn't know that they were really spending the weekends there. They're going down state to another town far away to go spend time with the boyfriend at his house. So,
can I ask a question? Really?
Yep.
At this time, has she met Candace at all?
I told you. She tried to start a friendship.
Okay. Have you met the other guy? Have you met him yet?
Remember, I used to work with him.
Okay.
Right.
Which is another quick. My daughter learned how much of a daddy's girl she was at one point because she knew me and her had a blow up about this guy because I kind of resented the fact, like, okay, you let this dude sneak in the back door after we broke up, but you could have just said you were dealing with this dude because at the time I asked you about it, you told me y'all were just walking buddies. And like I say, this dude is older. This dude is like 60-something. Okay, so I didn't think nothing. Okay, you're walking buddies. No, come to find out you like doing the elderly. So, okay, fine. So, she learned one time he was over there, and I was coming to pick them up. And I'm picking them up, and my daughter lays a little bomb out as they're walking away, as they're going to the car, and says, hey, Daddy, Bobby's inside, and walked on to the car.
Right, okay.
And I'm a little like, I say, all right, I say, so your boy is there. He ain't going to come out and say nothing to me. No, she says, just get the kids to go on and go. So I'm a little deep. And I go to close their door. Now, their door sticks, but she took it. I went to close the door, but she took it that I slammed her door as I was leaving. And I swear on my life that was not my intention. But I could also admit that I might have had a little more adrenaline flowing through my arms than probably I normally would. I might have slammed it than I intended to. So you had to give it a nice little nudge to get it closed.
Right.
Yeah. The door, I'm going to the car, she opened the door and starts cussing me out. And I just started off a big argument. So I'm like, why are you sitting here cussing me out like you a man? Send old dude out here and watch me wreck his ass. It degenerated into something bad, and I ended up taking the kids, and we had this big argument. And then later I had to have a talk with my daughter about, it's not cool to manipulate daddy. Don't do that again. So, you know, when Tom hit, we had to talk about it. This was way later, and we were all cool, and everything was fine. So we knew that they were spending time with them, and that was fine. They supposedly went camping together. No problem. We did everything but let Shayla go with them.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no need.
We did everything but let Shayla go with them for that. So as the time gets closer, we're telling Nia, okay, we got to pick you out a dress for the wedding because she was going to be a flower girl.
Candace's
wedding. And my son wasn't going to be a ring bearer. I asked my son to be my best man.
Which is what's up.
And I had told him the responsibilities of the best man. And I told him, your responsibilities, you're going to have to hold on to this ring. And this ring is very important. And I'm trusting you with this ring. So, you know, we had this little moment, you know.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and it was all touching and whatnot. And then one day, Candace is doing my daughter's hair, and she said, "What did she say to you?"
She said, "You know, me and Raquel won't be at the wedding." She said, "It's too bad me and Raquel won't be at the wedding." And I said, "Why would you say that?" She just said, "Oh, we won't be at the wedding." And I couldn't, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, she's a kid.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't put too much stock into it. I mean, I heard it, You know what I mean?
But then you didn't.
Exactly. You know, it was one of those things like, okay, well, you know, maybe they were planning a camping trip or something. I'm like, yeah, that'll blow over. You know, I didn't put that much stock into it. And, you know, and to this day, I kind of beat myself up over it. You know, I mentioned it to Ray, but, you know, when you, it's kids, you know, so you hear it,
right.
You know.
But you don't.
But you
yeah.
don't. You know, so it was one of those things.
Another incident happened. This is just before the end of the school year. My daughter's in third grade, and this little boy has a crush on her. And the little boy don't know no better, so the little boy starts filling her booty. And she's like, don't do that. Keep your hands to yourself. But my daughter is a straight-A student. My daughter don't want no trouble. My daughter's always been that way. My daughter seems like we always say she's been here before. And she just that's trouble. I know to stay away from it because the last time I was here, it just got me in all kind of trouble. So she just stays away from trouble. So she didn't say nothing to the teacher, but she came home and she told me. I said, okay. Uh-huh. Don't worry about it. I got you. That won't be happening again. So I go up to the school to talk to the principal. The principal is this man, and I mm-hmm. him, and I don't like his response. He kind of not taking this as seriously as I feel like he should. So we're bumping heads on this. Like, hey man, I'm telling you that my daughter has been violated. See, you don't understand. Maybe you don't understand, but
mm-hmm.
my innocence is now gone because at this point I had to have a talk with her and have a talk with her about what boys truly want when they get older. And now
mm-hmm.
she's to be on guard for that for the rest of her life. So you don't seem to get that. And he's still like, it's no big deal. Now the vice principal happens to be this black woman who's not in the office. I say, you know what, man? I say, maybe you need a better perspective on this. Your vice principal's a woman. Why don't you talk with her before I kind of lose my cool up in here? I'm going to go talk to your boss. So I get in my car and I go up to the school district to have a talk with the superintendent.
Right.
And luckily, I mean, the dude actually did call his vice principal in there and had a talk. And she kind of set him straight to the ways of the world, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So while I'm in there talking with the superintendent, he calls me on my cell phone and asked me to come back. And he came back and he apologized and said, you know what, I guess as a guy, I totally didn't understand it like that. But, you know, vice principal set me straight. And I'm like,
uh-huh.
Oh, cool. So, excuse me. So we arranged to have the boy with a week of detention. And they told him, if you ever do this stuff again, you will get expelled. And, you know, they told him that, and then I look at him, I say, yeah, and if you ever do that again, you're going to have to deal with me. Not that I would really hurt the kid, but I wanted to let him know.
Mm-hmm. Put some fear in him.
There you go, and daddies don't play that. So
right.
It was all said and done and over, but I also told him, I said, let me tell you something. I'm a former Marine, and I've taught my children how to defend themselves. So I'm telling you now, if this ever happens again, I'm giving my daughter carte blanche to defend herself if anyone invades her space in any way that's uncomfortable. So I'm just letting you know. He's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
no problem, okay? Fast forward a year. Fast forward a couple of months. Now it's the next school year. We're in the house, and my daughter came home. She's upset. She's in fourth grade now. She says, boy, who's still got this crush or whatever, start messing with her in recess. And he's a boy. He don't know about these hormones inside of him, and he don't know how to manifest and express them properly. He feels on her butt again. She gets
mm-hmm.
mad, walks up to the teacher who's on duty at recess, tells the teacher what happened. The teacher blows her off and dismisses
mm-hmm.
her, doesn't do anything. My daughter goes around all day with this on her soul. So when they were at gym, I guess she kind of reached that moment like my man on the bus and said, I can't take no more. You're going to jail now. The boy is running around the corner, and she catches him square in the chest, folds him up like a folding chair. The gym teacher, who don't know anything, just sees her out of the blue cold deck him, grabs her and say, okay, yeah, you're getting suspended. I'm taking you to the office. Takes her to the office. She thinks she's going to get in trouble. And I'm like, so she tells me what happened. I said, don't worry about it. I will be up there tomorrow. Now, that's when the vice principal is now the principal. And she found out what happened. She knew I was coming. So me and Candace go up there, and she was already waiting for me. She's got the boy, and she told the boy's parents to show up. The boy's parents doesn't show up. The grandmother shows up. So we all go in the office to talk about this, and the first thing she says is, don't worry, Imani is not getting suspended. You don't have to worry about that, and we're going to expel the boy. And the grandmother and the boy is sitting there. The grandmother turns around with tears in her face, turns around and tells the boy, boy, why would you sit there and disrespect that young lady like that? I told you what happened to me when I was a little girl. And she starts crying. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let's not expel the boy, because if we expel the boy, all we're doing is feeding him to the streets, and now he ain't going to learn nothing. But let's give him a week out of school detention. And again, I get next to him and say, you know, the next time you do this, you think she hurts you. Wait till I get my hands on you and the grandma, and I'm going to serve him up to you. He's really scared now. Never had another problem out of the boy. But I didn't want to see the boy get expelled and sent out to the street. That's not cool.
I would save the life.
Right. So the principal goes to hit the communicator and was going to call the teacher that blew my daughter off up to me. And I'm like, what are you bringing her up to me for? Well, she needs to apologize for what she did. I said, yeah, but she didn't disrespect me. She disrespected my daughter. That's who she needs to be talking to.
Right.
So we leave, and the teacher went to my daughter and apologized to her. And took her aside and apologized to her for not respecting her. So I'm thinking that must have really gave her a swell test and a good feeling in her heart to see this adult apologize to her. And I told her, I said, see, did you get in trouble? No, I said, didn't I tell you that if you got to defend yourself, I always got your back. I will always have your back, no matter what. Now, she done seen me go up to the school and turn it over twice for her. So as we were coming out, Candace was outside and said, I heard you had to come up here. What happened? So I told her what happened. So she said, oh, so now Mr. Pro Black is just getting kids kicked out of school, huh? Is that what a black man
who
does?
Monica. Okay, you keep saying Candace.
Did I say that again? I'm sorry. I'm like, I keep looking at you.
Yes.
I'm going to stop looking. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You need to pass something else.
Yeah,
look at
yeah.
You going to have these
looking. Well, you know you're my inspiration. Right now, you're my strength. I'm feeding off of you. I'm sorry.
There you go. That'll be something nice.
But, Monica says, yeah, what kind of black man are you? You know, with Farrakhan like that? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, again, as things start deteriorating, she finds more and more things to be upset with me about. So then all of a sudden she says, well, you know what? Rakim is having trouble in school. And I say, Rakim, yeah, he's doing all right, but he could do better. But, you know, he's a boy. Again, he's my boy. I know how I was when I was in school.
Right, right.
Oh, what the hell is doing? And I know he'll grow out of it. I have to stay on him like my dad stayed on me. And that's what I do. So every school year, me and Candace, I'm saying your name right there. Now, me and Candace would go up to the school. and we would always meet the teachers, but we'd also give them home numbers.
Yeah.
We would always give them beeper numbers. We would always give them cell numbers and say, don't you hesitate ever to call me, no matter what. So one day I'm at work, and, before that, we had this, like you were talking about, this incident about Ritalin. She feels like Rakim don't know how to sit still. We should put him on Ritalin. I'm like, we're not on no Ritalin.
Right.
Come to find out, she was sneaking them to the doctors on the weekend and trying to get the doctor to put them on Ritalin. So when I found out about this, the doctor was scheduling him for tests. And I went up there and I said, first off, I said, let me explain something to you. You're working under my insurance. They're covered under me. Number one, you work for me. So the next time they're brought in here for anything, if I'm not here, you will call and notify me.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't like that because he has to acquiesce to that because I'm they're my primary caregiver and it's under my insurance. So as this is going on, they're scheduled. She wants to schedule them for this test. So I'm like, okay. So I'm gonna be there, and I'm like I'm trying to explain to him. Now you're trying to explain to an 8-year-old kid,
mm-hmm.
what the hell this test means. That it's important. You got to be focused. You got to be ready to take this test. So when it's time to take the test, Monica.
She wanted him to act out in a way for him to basically get her approval.
Right.
That he needed.
Right.
This.
Test ended up getting canceled because she didn't show up and the test ended up getting canceled. I said, that's fine. That's good. Now, I'm at work one day and I get a call on my cell phone. It's the teacher said, Rakim is acting particularly bad today. He has just been out of control. I don't know what's gotten into him, but I just can't do anything with him. Can you come up here today? I said, no problem. I leave work. And I promptly come up there, and she tells me that he's just been acting all out of sorts, way worse than normal, and that I don't really think that he should be behaving like this. I said, don't worry, you'll never have this problem again. And I look at him, and I say, now apologize to the lady for cutting the food. He apologized.
Mm-hmm.
I say, well, since I'm here, I'll stop in and I'll check in on my daughter. I check in on my daughter. My daughter's doing fine. I say, well, since we're both here, it's about an hour before it's time for school gets out. I just take him with me. We go home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mad, and I want him to know it. Now, my son, let me explain something out there to people about young black males in third grade. If a young black male is in third grade, tracking begins, and if he's acting out and not behaving himself, this is an easy way to start tracking him to remedial classes, so on and whatnot, on their way to dropping out, expulsion, jail, and whatnot.
Now, right.
I know this, so I want to bring it to him and put it to him in a way that he knows he cannot act like this. This will not be tolerated on any level. So the whole day, I'm not really speaking to him. At the dinner table, I was being real cold and I was being real chastising. And that night, you know, I take him upstairs. The kids are downstairs with Candace. They're giving us space because they know I'm giving him the chat. And I'm telling him, you ever act like that. What is wrong with you? You don't disrespect these teachers when they're sitting here trying to. I lay into him. I lay into him like my dad used to lay into me.
Right.
Saying, oh, well, son, you know what? I used to screw up when I was in school, too. Ain't going to cut it. So, and then I proceed to give him a spanking to remember. And I'm letting everybody know out there, yes, I beat him behind. I gave him a whipping. I gave him one of the good old school whippings like I got.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I gave him a good whipping. I sent him to bed. I didn't kiss him goodnight, and I didn't tell him goodnight. Now, I kissed him and tell him goodnight every night. But I wanted him to know that his dad is really upset with his behavior. Now, later, you know, a couple of days later, I'm going to take him out for ice cream. We'll go for the chat. And this is when we'll have to talk about, hey, man, you can't be doing that. But I want to drill it into him, and I want him to, every time he thinks about cutting the food in school, I want his behind to send his brain a message, hey, man, don't do this. So that day, they had a half a day. We did not meet this, but they had a half a day. Monica picks them up and supposedly takes them to school. She drops Shayla off, and she takes the kids. From this point, from that morning, That morning when I seen them get in that car was the last time I've ever laid eyes on them.
My God.
Ever.
My God.
Ever.
And Tony, this was the turning point. I'll never forget. This was my daughter's sixth birthday, January 20th of 2004. I'm at work, and I remember this like it was yesterday. I'm at work. This was the 19th when Rakim got the spanking.
Mm-hmm.
Very next day, I'm at work. Ray and I did not know the kids had a half day. So I'm at work. I get the phone call. You know, at my job saying that no one's here to pick Shayla up. There was a half day today.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, there was no notification sent home. The notification was sent home with the kids all last week. I said, okay. I said, well, where
are
And they said, well, they didn't come to school today. And instantly, Tony, it was like I knew.
Your heart dropped.
My heart dropped to my stomach. And first thing I did, I remember like it was yesterday. And I mean, I remember calling her repeatedly. She would not answer the phone. And I knew something was wrong. Would not. It kept going. I worked for a cell phone company at that point in time. I know how phones work. So she turned the phone off. So it was going straight to voicemail. She was evading my calls. So I told my manager, I said, I got to go get my kid from school. So next I'm calling Ray. I'm telling him what's going on. And Ray was like, oh, well, you know, they just probably took the day. I said, mm-mm. I said, something just don't.
You know what? At that point is when you started having that, what we call a woman's intuition.
I knew.
When you feel it in your gut.
I knew. Because I knew from the retaliation. I knew she was mad. I knew she was mad about the DCFS call. But damn it, you endangered the lives of your own kids. So that had to be done. You didn't see the error in your way. And that's what hurt me. That's what's resurfacing from all of this.
Yeah.
So I called Ray and I said, look, I'm on the way to get Shayla. I'm going to find out what's going on. I'll keep you posted. I go pick my baby up. This is about 45 minutes after the kids are getting out of school. And my baby is, you know, like I said, she's sick. She's in kindergarten at the time. And I said, well, What happened? Where's Nia and Rakim? And then she's like, I don't know. She said, they gave me a big cold hug and told me goodbye. And
I know. And then, I mean, at that point, I get off of work. I just leave. I tell my boss, hey, I got to go. I get home, and we're at home. I keep calling. We're waiting to hear something. Five o'clock roll around. So at 6 o'clock, I say, you know what? I say, I think you're right. Something is really wrong. I think I better go ahead and call the police. I call the Park Forest Police Department. I tell them what happened. And the officer, he's real cool at first. And then he says, what's your name? I give him my name. And I could feel his demeanor change over the phone. I mean, his demeanor changes, does a complete 180 and says, hey, you know what? You need to come down here. And I'm like, whoa, watch your tone there. Watch your tone. What's the problem? You need to come down here. I say, no, I don't think I need to come down there, because if I come down there, I think me and you are going to have a problem.
Right.
So Chance is telling me, calm down. We go down there. And that's when we find out he wants to place me under arrest for child abuse. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And he's going to come behind that glass. And I say, man, if you come behind that glass, this whole department is going to see you get fucked up, because you're not going to put your hands on me. I'm coming to you because my children are missing. So luckily there was this one black officer, this black female officer named Officer Cheney, beautiful sister. She came in and got between him and the door and said, I'll take this. And she came out and talked and said, yeah, they said that you abused your son. And I want to interview you. She said, can I come by tomorrow and talk to you? I said, yeah, you're welcome here. You're welcome to come by, sure. She come by the next day and tells us what happened. She says, yes, they said you beat up your son the night before. So I tell her what happened. I said, yeah, I whooped my son. I said, I'm not going to sit there and lie to you about that. Yeah, I whooped him. I didn't beat him. I didn't abuse him, but yeah, let me tell you what he did. And I told her, you know, he was acting up in school and, you know, why he had to get punished. I showed them their room. I said, you know, I don't know. I said, I rarely, rarely, rarely have to whoop my kids. That rarely has to happen. And she says, I know. She said, and then she tells me that she wanted DCFS involved. And she tells her, well, for DCFS to be involved, we have to go ahead and take your son to the hospital and let a doctor examine him. She won't let the doctor examine him.
Of course not.
Well, I got a quick question. I don't want to jump too far ahead of the story. Are they still in Illinois at this time?
Yes.
They're still here?
Yes.
But you don't know where they are?
I don't know where they are.
Okay.
This is the next day after they disappeared.
Right. Okay.
So, well, I take it that they're at the house, but she went to the court and got an automatic order of protection under abuse. And, of course, if I'm abusing them, the court isn't going to take any chances. They're going to give her an automatic order of protection, but it's going to be for 2 weeks, and I can immediately go to court. So I got a court date in 2 weeks. Now, the officer says, yeah, well, we told her that, you know, we can't call DCFS if you don't take him to the hospital. Now, if they're listening out there, I want you to ask yourself, if you really think that I wrecked my son the way you think that I did, why didn't she put me on blast and take them to the doctor? Because if I abused him and did a penny from good times on him, take him to the hospital so I can have my butt arrested.
Real quick, I know we have to turn over and get ready to do your show on Hot Topics Talk Radio. We're getting ready to wind the show down in a minute because we have to give you time to set up as well. Do you want to?
I'll do is I'll go ahead and duck out and grab my tissue because you know what? Candace got me. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and duck out, continue what you're doing, and then it'll feed right into the next episode.
Everybody hang with us. We will tell you when to switch over to Hot Topics. We still got a little bit of I think I want to hear this.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay, guys. I'll see you on the next turn, okay?
All right. See you in a little bit.
All right.
All right. So the officer says that, no, we're not going to – I don't see any abuse here. I'm not going to have you booked for abuse. So she says, now I'm going to contact the mother and tell her that we don't see any abuse here. She leaves us and goes to tell Monica about the abuse. The next day, she asks us to come back to the police department. We're like, okay. So we go into her office and she tells us that, you know what? I told her that we're not going to file abuse charges against you. And she proceeded to cuss me out. But she said, when she cusses me out, the complaint isn't about you. She says, the complaint is about Candace.
Now, that much I didn't know.
Yeah, okay. She says, the complaint is about Candace. He's marrying this young chick and this, that, and the third, and why would he do that? And they're doing this, and they're not treating these kids right. And she says, there's something totally wrong here. So I got 2 weeks to go to court. I'm looking for a lawyer, fast and furious. I find this one lawyer, and this one lawyer says, hey, you know what? Yeah, we can talk about it. Hey, let me make you an appointment. She makes me an appointment. I call her on a Tuesday. She makes me an appointment on a Thursday and says, come see me Thursday at 5 o'clock. I go, okay. So I'm like, I said, I think we got a lawyer. So I'm going to go wait for this interview. I go to the interview. I'm sitting there, I'm waiting, 5:30, 5, at 5 o'clock. 5:30 rolls around. She finally comes out. I say, "Hey, how you doing?" She says, "Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Gage? You know what? I need to inform you that I can't take your case because I'm going to be their mother's attorney."
And she tells you this how many days?
And I blow 3 days before the right. So now I'm looking. I can't find an attorney. I can't find an attorney. So I go and I'm going to do it myself.
So I'm curious. The same lawyer you went to try to hire to take your defend you
already had took Monica.
She had already did that.
Already. She could have just said, "Hey, I can't take your case." She could have just said, "I can't talk to you." She could have said that when I called on the phone.
Exactly. The easiest thing to do would say to win a case against a person without a lawyer is to string them along days before the case and go.
So
ahead,
here's brush number two with the system for me. We go to court. Me, Candace, and my best friend Lonnie is going to court. I was thinking I might have to use him for a material witness. I asked Officer Cheney, would she come to court? But she says, "I can't come to court. I have to be subpoenaed. I don't know how to subpoena anybody in L. It's Friday. So I don't know what to do." So she says, "Hey, the best thing you can do is take the police report with you. And, you know, hopefully that'll be enough." So we go to court. And believe it or not, I'm winning. I'm in the court. I bring everything I got. When the judge says, "Who has custody?" We both says, "I do." The judge says, "Wait a minute, what do you mean you both do? Who has legal custody? We never went for legal custody. They've been in my care since 2000. And she says, "No, they're not. They've been in my care since 2000. And he says, "Well, you know what?" So I said, "Your Honor," and I open up my briefcase. I say, "Here's the library cards. The library cards have my address on them. Why do they have my address? Because I took them for the library cards. Here's their school registration forms. The school registration forms sees me as the primary parent. Here is their addresses on there. It's my address because they stay with me. Here's their medical cards. Their medical cards is under my name. Here's their birthday party pictures. Here's their birth certificates. Why do I have all of this stuff? Because they live with me." She says, "No, Your Honor. He came into the house, beat me up, and took it."
Well, of course. Well, of course.
So the judge isn't buying it. So as we're going along, I say, now the lawyer that she got hasn't said a word, just standing there. But this is where all that money kicks in. I go and hand the judge. I say, "Here's the police report that shows me as they're finding that I did not harm or abuse my child." And as I go to hand it to the judge reach out for it. The lawyer, now this is the only thing the lawyer has done the whole time. She says, "Objection, Your Honor, hearsay." Judge pulls his hand back and says, "I'm sorry, son, I can't accept that. Because, it could be hearsay." I say, "It's from the police department." He said, "You could have typed it up. Don't know what to tell you." So the judge says, "Look," he says, "I smell a rat here, but, you know, there's nothing I can do about it." He says, "What I'm going to do is I'm going to extend the order of protection for 6 months." And he looks at me and says, he looks at me and says, "Let me tell you something. I'm really supposed to extend this order of protection for like 3 years, but I'm only going to extend it 6 months." And he looks at me and says, "Son, you need to get a lawyer."
Okay.
So during that time, I have to go find a lawyer. I did find a lawyer. I get the order of protection lifted. But before that, she finds another way to try to get DCFS involved. Again, when I described what I wanted to do to the back of that truck, I end up doing it. Candace say, "It'll make you feel better. Go ahead and do it." So we have the truck detailed and airbrushed like that. And because I'm no longer allowed to pick my stepdaughter up at the school because they go to the same school, they had to move her to another school that I can go pick her up at without ever having to come to the school that the kids are in. So as I'm doing that, we're crossing paths all the time. I see them with their mom all the time. So one day when we get the truck detailed, I'm picking up Shayla. We're driving home. They're going down the same street. Shayla doesn't know what's going on. Shayla says, "Oh, look, there's the kids." And she's in the back of the truck waving. So we go by. I say, "You know what, I can't speak to them, but I'm going to blow a horn." So I blew a horn at them. And then I passed them,
and then I pass them, and then I get in front of them so they can see the back of the truck to see that I did it in the way that we always talked about. Continued on and went home. A couple of weeks later, we get a call from DCFS saying that I've been trying to run my children and her off the road now for 3 weeks straight, and that I'm trying to kill them. And I'm like, what? So the DCFS lady says, I need to come and talk to y'all to investigate. So she comes into our home. We show her what happened. We show them their room with their clothes still in it. And tell them, hey, you know, this is nothing like that. And we tell them what happened. She says, oh, I understand what's going on here. Don't worry, Mr. Gates. You got nothing to worry about. And I'm going to go ahead and tell my boss that there's no abuse here and blah, 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 blah. I get a letter later in like 2 weeks saying that I've been indicated by DCFS as a child abuser. You could either accept this or would you like to appeal? Well, we appealed it. I know we don't have much time left in the show. We appealed it. We went to court, and we won. We won because we directly questioned the lady who didn't do any type of investigation. She just indicated me because I'm a black man.
It was just one simple question during this interview, and I hope you don't mind me picking up right. But during this interview with DCFS, number one, it was only the representative that came to our house. Mind you, the kid's mother did not show up. Now, what ended up happening is we sat down. I could not speak. I could only sit there and witness, but I could write. So, you know, the judge is telling Ray that he can, you know, he can ask the DCFS representative whatever he wants. And it is incumbent on DCFS to prove what they were accusing Ray of. So I started jotting down. I started listening to what's going on. First question I wrote down was, where did this supposedly take place? I wrote it down on a piece of paper and slid it over to Ray. And when I tell you, the lady is fumbling and has nothing written down, no notes, no nothing. This is the same woman who came to our house and sat with us for 2-3 hours talking about the Cubs and the White Sox and all this other stuff. But she was there to grasp how much information we knew about the mom. Was not there to help us whatsoever. She was there to defend the mom. Once again, the system is corrupt. It's broken. And it's just wrong how this happens to good families, to good parents.
And also, yeah, wrapping this story up, as we won that case, and we had the order of protection lifted that same week. As soon as the order of protection is lifted, our first thing we go is to the school. I want to see my children. We go to the school. That's when we find out that she had them pulled out of the school and she had the record sealed. I say, okay, well, now we go into the house. That's when we find out that she's moved out of the house. The house done got foreclosed on. She done left the house, and she totally disappeared. And it took a whole lot of time to figure out where she was. And we'll cover all of that when we jump over to Hot Topics Talk Radio. But you know, along the way, there was an article in the Chicago Defender that also a lot of people who read that article when they did the story about this Googled her and did a lot of things to help find where she was. And then Candace did a lot of detective work to find out where she was. And when she found out where she was, I did not know, she tried to contact her, and she tried to contact her family to say, at least let us know that they're okay. At least tell them that we love them.
I sent them cards. I sent them all kind of stuff. I sent the uncle a long letter. I left him a long voicemail. I know he works for a university in certain state. And I went out to contact him. My voicemails, my letters, all went unanswered. I don't know if the kids got any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I would like to say to Imani, Nia, and Rakim, if you're listening, we have never forgot you. Every year since you've been gone, we brought birthday cards.
It's cool. I mean, it's hard, you know. I
it is hard, but they need to know.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know and understand what their dad has gone through and what this has done to our family. And I wouldn't wish this type of pain and hurt on my worst enemy. But I really hope that they're listening, or if someone who knows them can relay this. The whole reason why True Brothers Radio came to be is to be a voice. This is not just about our family. This is about anyone who's ever experienced, any father, any mother who has ever experienced this type of hurt. There are plenty of children out here who don't have fathers, who don't have mothers. And how dare those who have a parent wanting to be a parent, how dare you take that away from them? These babies did not ask for this. They did not ask to be here. But the one thing we owe them is the right to have both parents, whether they live in the same household or not. It's our social responsibility to make sure that these babies are taken care of.
I mean, that in itself, man. This story here is it touches a lot of people because, like Candace said, it's wrong on so many levels because what you did not affect one life, or not even just the children's life. That what you did, I don't want to get too personal, but things like that has a domino effect. And because of selfishness and loathing towards another person, you've caused destruction. And if that's the case, then I hope you're happy with yourself. But I personally, my personal opinion is, why? I mean, I guess it's not really an opinion. It's a question of why. This is something we really have to look into, as even with our own community, that we have to realize that we're causing our own destruction, and because of that,
everybody, get ready to switch to Hot Topic Talk Radio, where we will. There's so much many more facets to this. Plus, Tony has a lot of surprises for you guys. Over and go to Hot Topics. If you're listening to this in the archives, go to the search engine, go to Hot Topics Talk Radio, and you can pick up this show on Hot Topics Talk Radio. Tune in with us next week as we celebrate our 1-year anniversary. It will definitely be more upbeat than this.
Right.
And this is us signing off, just saying, hey, if you...
Yeah, keep it going. I mean, we'll get into the 1-year anniversary in a minute, but I wanted to really get this out here really, really fast, man. If I hope that your kids listen to this episode. I really hope they hear this so they can know beyond what they've just been told. That's what I really wanted to get out
they've
there real
fast.
They've
got questions to ask.
Exactly.
They've got questions to ask. And they know who those questions need to be posed.
There you go. So we're going to take a switch to Hot Topics Talk Radio. And if you're not listening to the Truth Brothers,
then the truth ain't in you. Two fingers, y'all.